You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Monday, so it's time for Shapiro World with David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities in Johannesburg. David, I was watching, we have to get Trump out of the way first. I was watching television on Friday night, and for some reason Trump went to, where did he go? He went to Pittsburgh, I think, and did a sort of a campaign-style rally there, and suddenly he blurted something out, and I said, well, what did you just say? He said, I'm going to make a very big announcement now, and I think it had just popped into his head to please the crowd. He said, I'm going to raise tariffs on steel and aluminium from 25% to 50%.
Yeah.
And they say that that wasn't in the speech. That was just something that he came up with.
I know.
And again, it's irresponsible. It's peculiar. I'll reiterate what I said last Monday, that people think he's got a big plan and that he's very, very clever and he's making us think that he's stupid. No, he's not. He is stupid. Over to you.
You know what worries me is that, yes, the markets have recovered very nicely. In fact, even today, they're not down that badly. They're holding up. I'm not quite sure what's holding them up. But my big fear is that the longer he goes on with uncertainty, because I don't think any businessman, any consumer can make a long-term decision. No one has any idea what is happening. And that would include the Fed. He can put pressure on the Fed, but the Fed's not going to take action until it has a clear view of where the economy is going, what the level of tariffs are going to be. And it isn't clear. You know, the only thing I laugh, because when I start to think about him, what sticks in my head, other than his jet of $400 million, is that he told kids that, you know, they can only have two dolls or something, and that he told us to buy the market. Other than that, it's just shambles. You know, it's an absolute shambles. And I'm getting worried that if this goes on, people are going to keep shifting out of the dollar, keep shifting out of America, you know, looking elsewhere, looking for something, just a safe haven, wait until clarity comes. And he's going to keep doing those kind of things. You know, this, 50% on aluminium, 50% on steel and everything, just because he happens to be in Pittsburgh. And there's nobody acting as a circuit breaker for him. There's no one stopping him. And that's also a deep concern, that he just can't keep doing this, you know. And it's for me, I think maybe we're going into the summer season, and people are going away, and that's why markets are not discounting it, and people are tired, and we'll regroup in August or something. But Lindsay, you're right. You know, it's an absolute shambles, and I want you to try and tell me what tariffs are in place, because everything has a limited life: 3 months, 10 days, 15 days, whatever it is.
There needs to be a consolidation of what happened from Liberation Day, so-called, to now. I mean, Europe, where's Europe? Europe was supposed to, on June the 2nd, I think, which is today, supposed to have a 50% tariff on everything. And now, after Christine Lagarde phoned up, Ursula von der Leyen phoned up Trump and said, no, please don't do that. He said, okay, July the 9th. So July the 9th is the next one. But as for the rest, I don't know. And as for the courts, the International Trade Court in New York saying, no, it's illegal. Now somebody else's Supreme Court says, no, it is legal, but some aren't. Where are we? This isn't a coherent plan. It's nonsense.
There isn't a plan. No, absolutely right. It's an absolute nonsense. And that's why I'm surprised the markets are as steady as they are. As sanguine as they are, they continue. You know, even now I'm looking, I thought Monday would be a bad day after what you said and reading the news over the weekend. And yet, you know, we're down a quarter of a point or something like that. But I'm worried that something might break. I'm hoping not. But I can't believe that this man is president of the United States, you know, that he's allowed to conduct himself in this way without anybody around him just holding him back. You know, it's inexplicable, and it's you know, people are, I don't know, I'm going back there on Saturday night. I'm going to my daughter's graduation.
Of course you are, yes. You've got a return trip coming up, yes.
But I mean, it's, I don't know whether I'm going to learn anything new that I didn't learn, you know, when I was there, if anything has really changed, or, you know, because probably the weather's getting better and people are going off to, the Hamptons, wherever they go from New York, or or Cape Cod from Boston, whatever. You know, and they'll say, oh, listen, we'll handle this madman when we get home.
Yeah, those days of the Hamptons and Cape Cod and everything, they're still real, but I don't know where they go now. Maybe they've bought islands in the Bahamas and places like that. I don't know. But I was thinking about you going back, actually, because you did mention it a couple of weeks ago, because I've been watching this series on the BBC with a chap called Simon Reeve. He's one of these sort of adventurer scientist types, quite young, that goes around to different places and learns about other cultures and countries and stuff. And he's done a very good series on Scandinavia, because obviously Scandinavian countries are consistently voted as the best place to live and the safest and the happiest people, etc. So he went to all three countries and he found out, yes, they are, and they're remarkable, but there's also a dark side. But he was there, was it Norway? Anyway, he was in one of the three, obviously, and he went there, and it was 11:30 at night, and the sun's still out, you know, it's the land of the midnight sun. He was close to the Arctic Circle of this country, and he said he's driving through this town, and there was a shop. The lights were on and everything. So I thought he'd stop and get a drink or something, a snack. And he walked in there. And it's essentially a florist and gift shop combined, but also selling drinks and things. And it was completely open. All the lights were on open, but nobody there. It was an honesty shop. And they said, you know, you just walk in and you take something, you write it down in a book. And it was a big shop. It's not like a little mom and pop store, as Americans would call it. And I thought, that can't happen anywhere else. I mean, I leave my front door open in the Netherlands on a day like today. It's been open all day, my front door, and I live on a street, a cobbled street, and people are walking past all the time and cycling past all the time. But I feel comfortable enough to leave it open. And my back door, for example, now, even though I'm upstairs, isn't locked. In fact, it's completely open, and not just unlocked, it's open, so people could walk in there as well. But they don't, you see. And I thought of you, and when you said, what am I going to learn when I go back to America, you're going to learn freedom, David, to a certain degree.
Absolutely. And I tell you something, I'm getting more and more nervous of living here. So when I say living here, last night, it's a Jewish holiday today, Shavuot. I went for a dinner at my late brother's wife at the family and that.
Yeah.
And driving in Joburg in the evenings is really traumatic. And I say that it's driving alone without streetlights. People drive madly. You're never quite sure who's behind you or who's in front of you. It's very, very, you know, it's very traumatic. And I'm not one of these panickers, but I feel like I'm a soldier on alert. I'm on an exercise, you know, looking for on patrol. And, even driving out on Friday, we went for lunch to the West Rand and that, you know, it's the potholes on the road, the state of everything, you know, there's nothing that's there for our safety. And that's why I'm saying, when I do feel the freedom in America, that's one thing I feel, this complete ease, you know, whether I'm on the roads, whether I'm walking, whether, you know, also the house that, you know, my daughter's house is always open. I never lock my flat in New York. We leave the door open and, yes. No chance of anybody coming in and taking anything. That is something. That's something that South Africa is. We're not addressing that in any way at all. Yeah.
Mm.
Even though Trump gave Ramaphosa a bit of a bollocking, and we came back with a view that we're going to start addressing it. But it's too deep. It's going to take a long time and some very hard decisions to make to control it.
Well, yes. Anyway, enjoy your trip. We'll speak on Thursday. But as for the markets over there, yeah, as you say, there's nothing. I think if the markets had been open when Trump started to speak on Friday night, late Friday night, then it may have been slightly different. But of course, people have digested it over the weekend and said, oh, it's just him again. So don't worry too much about it. In South Africa, what have we had? We've had a couple of numbers coming out. Telkom doing okay with the trading update. Robex doing all right, up 11%. But again, it's the sort of stocks that you don't look at, or you look at them because you have a duty to do so as a South African investor with certain clients that might still have the remnants of those companies in their portfolios. But it's not something you're going to say, right, these results are warranting my attention.
Yeah. You know, there are a couple of companies I've asked, but I couldn't go into them simply because they're too small to get a decent stake.
Yeah.
But some of the businesses down at the bottom end of the market, a Lewis Stores, a Pepco, who are catering for the low end of the market, Capitec. All right, Capitec's quite a large company. It's 200 billion. You know, it's one bank. But most of the other businesses at the low end of the market are doing very well. We've had good results out of Lewis, and a very decent result out of Pepco. They're selling these cheap phones and are making an absolute fortune, smartphones. I think they assemble them here, and they're in every city, or every dorp in South Africa, you'll find a Pep store there. But I mean, outside of that, it's very difficult to put a decent portfolio. You know, the banks, for example, the First Rand, Standard Banks, will just bumble along. I looked at MTM, that's Metropolitan's results today. It's a very reasonable result. They've got a wonderful lady in charge, Jeanette Marais, who's turned this business around. But you can turn it to a certain point. Then you've got to start getting clients. You know what I mean? You can reposition it, and I think this applies to so many other businesses. You can reposition it, start to fix, you know, what below the line costs, take your debt down, all things like that, improve your margins. But in the long term, or even in the medium term, you've got to sell more goods, or you've got to get more customers, and that's the
challenge. This is what I was going to say. When it comes to Capitec, the story continues to astound, doesn't it? It really does. I mean, where are they? Are they just reinventing themselves and saying, right, we've got this customer. This customer already has three of our products, and he's a loyal customer. And now we've got this new one. So let's tap into him for that. So, and they're all interlinked, and they're very clever, and you can do everything on your phone, and it's easy to understand. And you don't have to go to the branch in Robertson on a Saturday morning in queue for an hour like you used to have to do and all that sort of thing. Some people still do because they like that. But where do they go next? Eventually, it reaches saturation point. They've taken all the customers from First Rand and Standard and Nedbank, and the population isn't growing wealthy. In fact, it's quite the opposite. Yes. People are leaving that have got money. So what happens to Capitec? Does Capitec say, we can do this elsewhere, we can spread?
They take customers from perhaps other branches at the low end of the market, because so they might not be these might be people who are already banking with Absa or Nedbank or First Rand or Standard Bank. I think that's where they capture them, and simply because of the easy to understand products that they deliver or offer. So I think that's where they're making it. Those banks, I do not think, are growing in that area. It cannot compete. So, and the customers love Capitec. So, you know, I really have great admiration for what they have done. And this has been going on for a long time. It's very difficult for the other businesses now to, you know, to try and get into that area. They just haven't got the same, you know, they haven't got the same culture, if that's the right word, or appeal. Yes. And it's the same thing with, you know, I have a friend, you know Bright Kumala.
No, I don't.
I don't know if you've ever met Bright. And Bright came from very humble circumstances and has built himself up, you know, really well, brilliantly. Went down to Cape Town University, he's done well. He's now with Vestec, with Paul Theron. And funny enough, I saw him on Friday and that. And he told me a story which was quite interesting. And he said, no black man will ever buy a Liberty product. Boom. You know? And I can't remember the exact reason. There was something that happened that turned them off. But I'm quoting. So, you know, he just said to me, they will never buy a Liberty product, you know, whatever it is, for whatever, whether there was a level of distrust or whatever, you know. And I've got nothing against Liberty. I mean, it's a good business, part of Stanbic. And, but there was something there that they didn't like, you know, whatever it was. And, you know, it's always stuck with me. And I think that's an attitude. It's a cultural thing, and they love Capitec for that reason.
So do you think black population, essentially what you're saying here, and without getting into too much trouble, the black population aligns itself with Capitec because it seems to have grown with the poorer of the South African population and serviced them well.
And the people who ran the business, you know, yes, they came from the Boer land, understood them. And understood them. When they went in, it was easy to open an account. You got your loan within a few minutes. They started to offer products that were not complicated. It wasn't a whole list. They weren't difficult to understand. And you got there easily. And now they've extended that. So you've got to understand that, you know. Listen, to give you another idea, you know, when Investec opened many years ago, it established, it became the Jewish bank. I'm talking in the 80s and 90s. It's lost that.
Yeah.
No, that's gone. But I'm saying it was the same kind of thing. There was an association.
What I'm saying to you, David, is that if the population...
So this, I hope I'm not... You know, this is not P, what's the word?
Politically incorrect. No, it's not at all.
But
it's,
I'm trying to... You know, this is very real.
But my point is eventually... It'll reach a point where you can only get so much blood out of the stone, especially if unemployment stays at 32.9%, especially if youth unemployment, which is the future Capitec customer, has to obviously transact with his or her benefit, and because benefits are a fact of South African life, as we know, huge part of our fiscus. But the point is that will Capitec ever be able to come to Europe and say, "Okay, we're not keeping the word Capitec. We're gonna get a European banking license, and we are going to adjust, keep our model, but adjust it slightly for the Netherlands, for example." No. Could they do that?
No. Different, completely different culture. I don't even think they could go outside, you know, of South Africa in too much of a big way. Just, you know, this is where their base is, and they probably have enough here to keep going for the meantime. And they're extending products, you know, they'll start to extend their products even into investment in a small way and so on. You know, just look, I looked at Easy Equities as well. You know, the same thing is, the same thing with Easy Equities. They captured a market. They started to offer fractional shares. In other words, you can buy, you know, a third of an Anglo-American or something like this. And they've done incredibly well for their customers. And it's very difficult to compete with them now.
So are you saying then that a David Shapiro that I speak to now in a generation's time will not exist? I'm not saying you're going to die. I'm just saying there's not going to be somebody who builds up a book of people, of dentists and doctors and people from his or her community and builds up that book and takes that book from some institution and has a profit center like you do. I'm being presumptuous here. But that's all gone, has it?
Yeah, not in South Africa. It's a low-growth country. There's not much opportunity here. And you know, I look at it every day. How do we grow our base? The only way we can grow our base, because the only people who got money are those very few, you know, people who are elderly or, 60 and beyond, maybe selling their businesses, looking to put it somewhere. But there's no new wealth of that size being created. We're not tapping into that market that Capitec is tapping into. You know, there's also a cultural gap that I find with regard to investment. And it's not for want of trying. I think there's a young generation who wants to know a lot about investing, and they want to invest, but I don't think they've built the capital up yet. And I don't know whether they're going to inherit it from their parents. There's so many issues there that I find difficult to cover. You know what? When I run this Crystal Challenge, this competition that I have, where we ask you to choose five stocks, so easy in concept. And when I go through the list, there are a huge number of young black people that are participating who want to know, you know, who enjoy being part of it. But I don't know. I don't know how to tap into them. I think Easy Equities has got a much better model to tap into them than certainly our firm.
That's why I think a company like Capitec has to get the top demographic professor or faculty at a university and say, okay, what's been happening and what do you think is going to happen? Because we need this for our future products, our future business, our future model and the way we make money. We can't just stand still like certain South African institutions have and said to themselves, right, we've got the doctor and the dentist and therefore that's how it's always going to be because, as we know, it's not, or the farmer, for example. So that would be interesting.
You see your 91s and your Investix and Coronations, they all want the pension funds and, you know, they want their chaps to go out and sell products and sell a passive product and that. And that becomes highly competitive in a market. And I also think that if you look at Coronations numbers, you know, they're not adding new business.
No.
They're doing well with the business they've got. But there's no, and what's happening is that because the economy is slowing down, your pension fund contributions are falling and so on. You know, medical aid contributions are falling or membership is falling and that. So the market is where Charles Savage has got easy equities. You know, just start to offer people an easy way for individual share ownership.
Yeah.
And funny enough, I think you can do that for offshore as well. So it's a model, I think, that's probably the growth model here.
All right, David. Any other stuff you read over the weekend in the big wide world of The Economist and the Financial Times?
It's the same story. It's just pounding at Trump and pounding at the uncertainty in the markets. It's very, you know, this has been going on for months. It's very difficult to get engrossed in in your reading anymore. You know, just say, oh look, just get him out the way. I want to go back to a period where we've got decent growth, inflation's under control, rates are coming down, people want to start new businesses. You know, if it wasn't for AI, I don't know where we would be, you know, and those tech companies. In fact, I'm trying in my mind to formulate some discussions that I can have with you or take, you know, with Viv and everybody around where we should be or how we should be looking at markets, you know, at the moment, going into a much more concentrated, much more concentrated portfolio of those companies that kind of can survive.
Sort of following on from that diversification chat that we briefly had at the end of our chat with Viv on Thursday, because that got me thinking. Not many things get me thinking, David. You have to really knock hard to open my thinking door, but there is something in it. Throw away that original, well, not throw it away, have it in your mind. The diversification, has its place, but on the other hand, you don't have to diversify for the sake of it. You don't have to have gold if you don't want gold.
That's my whole point. You don't have to go into that model. And I thought about it, thank goodness for AI, because I looked up, I had been at meetings where Charlie Munger had spoken about the success of Berkshire and said it was only one or two, maybe four or five good ideas that built their wealth. That's it. You know, and I've got all the comments here. The other thing I thought about that Buffett had also made, he says, you know, if you think about businesses, it's one idea. You know, Jeff Bezos started Amazon. One idea. Zuckerberg started Facebook, which is Meta today. You know, keep going. Bill Gates, Microsoft. You know, it's just one idea. That's where their wealth is. They haven't got diversified portfolios. Their wealth exists in one big business. And I'm saying, okay, that's what I want to do. I want to back those chaps, you know, maybe five or ten of them. That's it. That's my portfolio. You know, I don't need to go extending into buy an ETF with 150 different companies in. You know, what's number 150? It's not going to make me wealthy. No. So that's, you know, I'm coming around more to that kind of thinking. It's always been, we've only put 20 odd shares in a portfolio, but even some of those 20s we can actually take down to maybe 10. 12. That's it.
Okay. Well, I'll be up for a discussion. We've got to obviously have a couple of naysayers as well that will say nonsense. You've got to have a geographical and sector spread in order to diversify because it'll protect you when certain things happen. And to a certain extent, they're right. But long term, no.
You've got to
know
your businesses. No, that's the whole point.
Mm.
You know, you can't do superficial. You can't just choose these companies superficially. You know, you've got to know them backwards. You've got to know know the businesses that you choose.
So, just quickly, also think about geopolitics over the next week, if you would, David, because I saw an interesting interview with a former Israeli prime minister whose name escapes me. Had a B-E-R-T at the end.
Barak, I know who you're talking about.
But anyway, he wrote an article which was front page of an Israeli a newspaper, and it was just said, enough, we are now committing genocide.
Yes.
And he went on about Netanyahu and his right-wing people, his right-wing cabinet, and he was quoting him, and this chap said, all people from Gaza are terrorists, and until they're all wiped out, Hamas will continue to flourish, and all that sort of thing, which I thought was probably set the cat amongst the pigeons a bit. And also what's happened to Putin over the weekend, he must be sitting there seething. Losing 40-50 warplanes. And what he's going to unleash on Ukraine, I don't think. And also now Poland getting a right wing, going against all the other elections recently. I don't know. It seems to me it might come to boiling point in the summer. Something's afoot, I think. But anyway, that's for another day, David. Thank you very much. No football to discuss apart from the Champions League final.
It was such a flop. I was so disappointed. I put off an evening with friends. I said, it's Champions League. This is the culmination of the whole league. Got to watch it. Mm. You know, I enjoy PSG. I hoped Inter would do something. And at halftime, I fell asleep. I didn't. I chose to fall asleep.
Okay. Just one other story before we go, and this will give you just something to mull over. You've heard of Lamine Yamal, who's a Spanish boy with North African roots, and his grandmother brought him up and everything. And he said, first of all, he couldn't sign his new contract because he's not old enough. So he had to wait until his 18th birthday, which was last week, I think it was, before he could put pen to paper for his new Barcelona contract. And he also insisted that his grandmother be there, but she was out shopping, so she couldn't attend the meeting. So he said, no, I'm not going to sign until she comes. So she came the next day. They have something called a buyout clause these days with these players. Now, Ipswich have just sold their star striker to Chelsea for a bargain basement, $30 million, because that was the buyout clause that Ipswich, with their wisdom, put in there. So $30 million they get. And the other players have fancier ones, like Mbappe, for example, at Real Madrid. Lamine Yamal's buyout clause, if somebody wants to go and buy him, some Saudi team wants to buy him, $1 billion. $1 billion. That is his transfer fee. You can't get him until 2031 when he's out of contract, unless you stump up that sum of money, and you can't change it. Extraordinary, isn't it?
Incredible. Listen, he's a gifted player. Mm. I mean, at his age, to have the confidence that he has and to have the skill, you know, it's once in a, when I say generation. Because we've had players like that. You've had Messi. You had Pele. You know, you're going to have. But he's super.
Yes,
and I just hope he can develop from where he is at the moment. You know, that it doesn't go to his head. He doesn't slow down. That he just keeps it going.
Well, it's been 2 years now. Because he debuted at 15. And he's very level-headed. I've heard interviews with him, and he's quite a decent. It seems as though he's got some intelligence as well. But anyway, $1 billion, David.
Good for him.
Yeah, we'll speak on Thursday with Viv Govender.
He must just keep the friends and family away. That's all. Uh-huh. But it seems if you've got a nice granny, that's great.
Good. David Shapiro is from Sassam Securities, and that was Shapiro World. Back on Thursday with David and Viv. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.